I don't know what that means. But it... Okay, all right. I could tell that. God is good all the time. And we are very happy to be here this morning. And we've been blessed by God's Spirit already, and we're looking forward to some more. I can think of absolutely nothing to say other than to just jump in and do this. I thought I was finishing up on discipleship a couple weeks ago, but I've been thinking about it some more, and we got this morning, and who knows, there may be another one coming. I don't know. When you think of the word disciple, for me at least, I always think of someone who is a follower. The disciples were followers of Jesus Christ, but Jesus had more in mind for them than just being followers. He wanted them to be leaders among men. And I think the disciples knew and understood this, but what they did not understand was the style of leadership that Jesus had in mind. In Matthew chapter 20, verses 20 through 28, there is an incident that happens, and we read that in our scripture reading this morning. I'd like to put that up on the screen and want to just read that with you one more time. Then the mother of the sons of Zebedee came to Jesus with her sons, bowing down and making a request of him. And he said to her, "What do you wish?" She said to him, "Command that in your kingdom these two sons of mine may sit, one on your right hand and one on your left." But Jesus answered, "You do not know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I'm about to drink?" And they said to him, "We're able." And he said to them, "My cup you shall drink. But to sit on my right hand and on my left, this is not mine to give, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared by my Father." And hearing this, the 10 became indignant with the two brothers. But Jesus called them to himself and he said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them. It is not this way among you, but whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you shall be your slave. And just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many." Jesus had a different style of leadership in mind than what would normally be associated with the word leader. Jesus wasn't wanting leaders in the traditional sense. In the traditional sense of that word, we think of someone like the CEO of a corporation or maybe the commander of a unit in an army. There's an element of do it my way or else in those styles of leadership. It's a leadership that's based on position, power, coercion. And there's not too much concern about what an individual may think or what they may be feeling about the orders that they've been given or the commands that they've received. The kingdom of God, though, is not made up of soldiers and it's not made up of employees, but it's made up of volunteers. And there's a different kind of leadership required when you're leading people who are volunteers. And Jesus taught his disciples a different style of leadership. He taught them to be servant leaders. He taught them about servant leadership. And that's actually the point that Jesus makes here in Matthew chapter 20, verses 24 through 28. Now, a few weeks later, Jesus and his disciples are in the upper room. It's the night before Jesus is going to be crucified. They are celebrating the last Passover, which Jesus will celebrate. They're with him. They do celebrate that Passover supper. And then Jesus takes a couple of the elements that are left on the table from the Passover supper. He takes the unleavened bread and he takes the fruit of the vine, the cup, which had the fruit of the vine in it. And he talks about them and he institutes what we call the Lord's Supper. And so they have the Lord's Supper. And as they finish the Lord's Supper, Jesus does something that I want to look at here for a second. It's found in John chapter 13, verses 4 and 5. It said, "Jesus got up from supper and laid aside his garments, and taking a towel, he girded himself, and then he poured water into the basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded." And then we're going to jump all the way down to the end of this incident, down to verses 14, 12 through 15. And this is where it says, "So when he had washed their feet and taken his garments and reclined at the table again, he said to them, Do you know what I've done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, the Lord and the teacher, washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I gave you an example that you should do as I did to you. Jesus, I think, is thinking back to that thing that happened in Matthew 20, 20 through 28. That incident where they were squabbling over who was going to sit on the right hand and on the left. And if you read those words back in Matthew 20, you understand they're talking about leadership in the traditional sense. In other words, there's a king and there's a throne, and I'm going to be his chief advisor on one side and the chief advisor on the other, and what we say is how it's going to be. And they're thinking in terms of leadership in that traditional sort of sense. And Jesus is thinking back to that squabble, and he tried to correct the problem with words. He tries to correct the problem with words in Matthew 20 and 28. But the disciples got heads like rock. Nothing goes in and nothing comes out. They aren't quite getting it, and he knows they're not getting it. And so the first time Jesus used only words, this time he goes one step further. Here in John chapter 13, he taught them how to be what I will call foot-washing leaders. And Jesus uses one of the basic techniques of foot-washing leadership to teach them the lesson that he wants to teach them. And one of the basic techniques of being a foot-washing leader is to lead by example. And all I want to do is, I just want to look at what Jesus did. He says, this is my example to you. I want you to think about the kind of leadership that he is talking about here and what kind of disciples, what kind of leaders he wanted the disciples to be. And I want to call this foot-washing leadership. That's the kind of leadership he wanted the disciples to be involved with. So let's start. Let's just take a look at the example first. Foot-washing leaders lead by example. Jesus is teaching his disciples to lead by example. You can find it right there. Where is it? For I gave you an example. Verse 15, I gave you an example that you also should do as I did you. Jesus said, hey, I've just set you an example. I've just acted it out. I've just shown you exactly what I want you to do. This is the kind of leadership I want you to exert. And so Jesus is teaching his leaders, teaching his disciples to lead by example. And words are powerful, especially the words of Jesus. But more powerful than words are words plus the actions which demonstrate those words. And so Jesus gave them an example. He shows them, he gives them an example of foot-washing leadership. He gave them an example of how to relate to one another and to other people. And whatever you want other people to be doing, be sure you're doing it yourself. I mean, that's the premise behind Jesus saying, I'm your example. Whatever you want others to be sure you're being that kind of person. And whatever you want others to see, whatever you want to see in other people, be sure that that's also visible in you. It just doesn't work very well in the kingdom of God for someone to talk the talk but not walk the walk. You can be absolutely right about what you're saying. You can be right on. But without the validation of your own life, the words that you say will have little, if any, effect. Foot-washing leaders lead by example. Now, Jesus sets the example here, and all I want to do for the next little while is just spend some time looking at the example. What is it that he did here that he wanted his disciples to catch? So some of this is pretty simple to understand. You don't have to work at it. But as we look at his example, here's what Jesus says. I'm looking at John chapter 13, verse 14. Foot-washing leaders lead by serving. And that's what Jesus is getting at here. If I then, the Lord and the teacher, washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. And by washing feet, he's just talking about, serving one another. You know, there was something that needed to be done here in this upper room that hadn't been done. And Jesus took it upon himself to render that service to his disciples here as he went around the room and he washed their feet. And so foot-washing leaders lead by example. Jesus taught his disciples to lead by serving the people around them. It's stated here as if it's confined to the people who are fellow disciples. He says, you also ought to wash one another's feet. And you're saying, well, who's the one another? Well, one another is the disciples. This gets broadened out in other teaching in the New Testament. I'm looking at Galatians chapter 6 and verse 9. It says, as we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, but especially unto those of the household of faith. Jesus, when he talks about serving other people, he's not just talking about serving the little group of which we're a part, this church. But he's also thinking of people outside the body of Christ. He says, as we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, but especially unto those of the household of faith. So we have a priority. Our priority is, first of all, our family. then our spiritual family, and then those people that that we live among, that's in our community, and then people all over the world for that matter. So he broadens it out. But I call this another name. I sometimes call this leading from the kneeling position. As I said, traditional leadership is based on position and power. Do it or else, not terribly concerned about what's going on inside of the person that you're leading. But foot washing leadership is based on creating something inside of the person that you're serving. Creating a desire in them to do the thing that you're doing. To be the kind of person that you're being. To be able to see in themselves the things that they see in you. A desire. They volunteer for it. That's what foot washing leadership is all about. People have to know that we care about them before they'll let us lead them. And how can we lead others to become part of the kingdom of God? Well, one part of the answer to that question is serve them. Give them reason to like you and to like the kind of person you are. Gain their trust. Create something within a desire within them to be that kind of a person. How can we lead fellow Christians to greater commitment and spiritual maturity? Well, again, you serve them. You try to create within them a trust, a love, a gratitude, or whatever. I want to be like that. That's the kind of person that I want to be. I want to know that person's Lord. And we don't do this so we can manipulate people, but we do it because it's the right thing to do. Now, there's one drawback to this kind of leadership. There's no guarantee that comes along with this kind of leadership. You can serve some people and they will never respond in the way that you'd hope. They gladly accept your service. They gladly accept the washing of their feet, but they never accept your leadership. In fact, it may get to the point, and I've had this happen several times, where some people may try to use that against you. I get a phone call here in the office probably once every 1 or 2 weeks, and it goes something like this. And this is just kind of the gist of it. And this is the way it sounds to me. You're the church. The church is supposed to help people. I need help. I've called 20 churches. They've all said no. They're nothing but fake churches. Are you a real church? And I said, well, yes, I got a bucket full of money just sitting right here. I'll be right over and I'll dump it off at your house. No, I usually don't say that. But in a general sort of way, they've soaked up the idea that the church is supposed to help people. And they're right. But they take it maybe just a step too far. And that's what I'm saying when sometimes people try to use it against us. But here's the question. How can shepherds and deacons get the flock to follow them? It's by washing their feet. How can a Christian man persuade his non-Christian wife to follow him and maybe accept his Lord? It's by washing her feet. How can a Christian wife persuade her non-Christian husband to follow her and maybe accept her Lord? It's by washing her feet. In fact, there's even a verse in 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 and 2, that kind of goes along with this. This is talking to wives who have husbands who are not Christians. It says, in the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives, as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. In other words, wash their feet. You might get a chance that you might be able to influence them or lead them. How do you lead a discouraged brother back to the Lord? Well, you could start by washing his feet. How do you lead a lost friend to Christ? Well, by ministering to them, by serving them, by washing their feet. The disciples of Christ are leaders who wash the feet of those they hope to lead. That's what Jesus is teaching us in his example. Now, there's another aspect of this foot washing leadership here that, in fact, there's two more that I want to talk to you about. But my third point here is that foot washing leaders take the initiative. Foot washing leaders are not waiting to be told, do this or do that. When they see a job that needs to be done, they take the initiative and they take care of it. Let's go back to verses 4 and 5 of John chapter 13. Let's read it again. Jesus got up from supper, laid aside his garments, and taking a towel, he girded himself, and then he poured water into the basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. When Jesus and the disciples came into that room, there was a standard operating procedure in that part of the world at this time was for someone to take it upon themselves to wash. If it was the owner of the house, would make sure that everyone's, all the guests, as they came in, their feet got washed. That was the custom. That was the way that things happened. And that was usually the job of a little household slave, maybe a little girl or something like that. And there were good reasons for that. It's not just a custom, but the streets were dirty and dusty, and ditches alongside the road, they're open sewers. And then there's these goats and cows and donkeys and all this. It goes up and down that street. And you know what happens when the cows and the donkeys and the sheep and the goat are walking up and down the street. They get kind of messy. And so people, as they travel back and forth between one person's house and another, they walk along those streets, and hey, their feet are kind of messy by the time they get to the house. And so it was something that was done. The question is, why hasn't this been taken care of? I mean, they're in the upper room. They're there. Evidently, the towel, the basin, and the water and all that's visible. I mean, as they walked in the room, they probably could see it. And I got some ideas here. Probably this was a rented room, the host wasn't there, the guy who owned the place wasn't there. And so there wasn't anybody really in charge of this particular job, but he had thought to leave what? A basin and some water and a towel. Because he knew that the people who were going to use that room would probably want to have that available. And so he left it. And as Jesus and the disciples walked into that room, every one of them, as they walked in, there was that basin and water and towel over there in the corner somewhere where all of them could see. So Jesus and the disciples have gone through what? They've gone through the Passover. They've eaten the Passover supper now, and Jesus has gone through the Lord's Supper. He's instituted the Lord's Supper, and no one has made a move toward the basin or the towel or the water. I suppose since Jesus was the Lord of the group, he could have said, appointed someone. He said, okay, you take care of this. Go over and get that basin and let's take care of this job, all right? Jesus had every right to command someone or to appoint someone to take care of that job. But here's what happens. Without a word to anyone, Jesus gets up and he goes over and he gets the basin and he gets the water and he gets the towel. And then he begins to wash the disciples' feet one by one. Now you have to think about what's going on with the disciples here. And I think I know pretty much what's going on with them. I think they're all kicking themselves because they hadn't thought to do it themselves. I think they feel about that tall when Jesus walks over and finally gets the basin and the water and the towel and begins to go around that room. And they're all going, oh my goodness, what is happening here? Why didn't I think about it? Why did I let that go? Now I got to sit here and I got to have the Lord of the universe wash my feet. Terribly embarrassing. Humiliating. They hate themselves for what they've done. And they all kind of participated in this, but no one was willing to make that move. But Jesus is the one, without a word, he doesn't ask anybody's permission. Doesn't tell anyone they're going to need to do it. He just gets up and he goes and gets the basin and the water and the towel, and he takes care of this problem himself. Just two amazing things here. First one, no one offered to help him. Do you notice that? And I think it's because they're just too stunned and too ashamed to do it. And in fact, as you get to the business there about Peter, that's the part we didn't read in this. When Jesus gets to Peter, he doesn't do anything. Peter doesn't want him to do it. Peter's saying, oh, no, 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 no. Well, I can understand why. Really, I ought to be the one doing your feet. And you're going around this room and you're about to do my feet? No, 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 no. You're not going to do that. No one offered to help him. They're too stunned. They're too ashamed. And here's the other thing. Jesus didn't ask anyone to help him. He saw a job that needed to be done, and he just got up and did it. That's foot washing leadership. Jesus was teaching his disciples about foot washing leadership. Take the initiative. Don't wait to be told. Don't wait to be asked. If you see a job and you're able to handle it, then just go do it. Don't worry about everybody else. There's a story in our New Testament, Luke chapter 10. It's the story of the Good Samaritan. one of those parables that Jesus told. And I know that you all know this story very well. And I've thought about what the priest and the Levite do in that story. The priest and the Levite are, there's a guy that gets beat up and he's left on the side of the road. And first comes a priest and then comes a Levite. And they both walk right on by and go right on. And we don't know why they do that. We don't understand. There's something not quite right here. And I've thought about this. Why do the priest and the Levite see this victim on the side of the road and pass by? I'll tell you why. Because they needed to go back and check with the deacon in charge of benevolence at the synagogue to see if the synagogue wanted to get involved. They wanted to go back and make an announcement at the next meeting at the synagogue and say, hey, someone fell in the ditch over here a couple miles down the road, and who wants to sign up to go help him? Now, I'm being a little facetious there. But then along comes this Good Samaritan. And I'm going to tell you, the Good Samaritan does exactly what Jesus did there in John chapter 13. He took the initiative. He saw a need, and he just took care of it. He didn't have to go get a bunch of other people around him in order to do this or organize some kind of a group effort. He just saw a need, and he said, well, I'm able to handle this. And he took care of it. That's just foot-washing leadership. Some of the things we run into, I understand, might take more than one person. So we go get a bunch of people. We go get a church, or sometimes a bunch of churches. And sometimes we might be getting into someone's area of responsibility, and so it just makes sense to go ask them or talk with them about it for you before you do something. I mean, I understand that too. But some of the needs that we encounter as Christians are things that we can handle by ourselves, and we ought to. Foot-washing leaders just take the initiative. They just take care of it and they go on. And there's one name that comes to mind here, and you all know her, Annette Correll. I'm going to tell you something. If I was a guy laying in the ditch on the side of the road, there's one person I'd want to see walking by, and that'd be Annette Correll. Because she was a woman. She didn't ask anybody else. If she saw a need, she just took care of it. And heaven only knows how many times she took the initiative and just said, I can take care of that, and I'm going to. And she did. But foot-washing leadership, part of that is taking the initiative, not waiting to be told, not waiting to be asked, just seeing that something needs to be done, and then just go do it. That's exactly what Jesus did. That was his example to his disciples. Right? You see it? Now, there's another aspect of this foot-washing leadership I want you to see. That is, to be a foot-washing leader, you need to take the job that no one else wants to do. You might have to take the job that no one else wants to do. Can you see that in the story? Now, washing feet was not at the top of anyone's job list. I can almost guarantee no one in that room, if they put their top 10 jobs that they wanted to do in life, foot-washing wasn't going to be on top. For most of them, it would have been at the bottom. And so we ask this question, why hadn't the disciples taken care of this before now? Because it was not a job that anyone wanted to do. And you want to know the truth about it? I doubt that Jesus wanted to do it. I doubt that it was on to be on his top 10 list either. This definitely wasn't a convenient time for him. Tomorrow he would go into the cross. He knew that. I think his disciples are still a little fuzzy about that. But he definitely had enough on his plate. There was already enough there for him to think about and to be concerned about. And instead, what's he doing the night before he's crucified? He's got to go over and get a basin of water and take care of something that somebody else should have taken care of. Jesus did the job that no one else wanted to do, and that's foot-washing leadership. As much as possible, I know the elders here want every Christian in this congregation to find a job in the kingdom that fits them, a job that is exciting, a job that is enjoyable, a job that they can feel good about, a job that they'll stay with. And you know, when it's exciting and enjoyable and you feel good about it, you tend to stay with it. I think the elders want everyone to have that kind of a ministry or whatever in the congregation here. But sometimes the job that we want to do, that job that really fits us, that job is really exciting to us, and the job we think is worthy of our talents or our abilities or whatever, just isn't available. But here's what I want you to know. There's still jobs to do, but they may not be all that exciting to you, and they may not be all that enjoyable to you, and they may not be a good fit for your talents. And you know what I call those jobs? Those are foot washing jobs. That's what they are. They're foot washing jobs. They're not on your top 10. They're maybe on your bottom 10 list of jobs that you would want to do if you had a choice. And here's the question. Am I willing to do something that's not an exact fit and that's not all that enjoyable to me and not all that exciting to me? Am I willing to be a foot washer in this congregation? Would I be willing to go get the basin and the towel and the water and take every job that nobody else wanted to do? Now, I stopped at this point, and I had no idea that this lesson was going to go in this direction, but this is where it ended up. I asked myself, and you can ask yourself, what are the foot washing jobs at Sunshine? And there's two of them that just jumped out at me right away. There's probably lots of foot washing jobs here. But what are the foot washing jobs at Sunshine? What are the jobs that need to be done that no one else or just a few people are willing to do? What are they? Because there are some foot washing jobs here that go begging all the time. Foot washing jobs that go begging all the time. I want to talk about children's ministry. About 10 or 15 years ago, we figured out that God was calling us to minister to children and to their families. Well, the one thing about children's ministry is that it's labor intensive. It takes a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of emotional energy has to be given. There's a lot of prep time involved in working with kids. But back those years ago, 10, 15 years ago, we started focusing on our children's classes, on their activities, on their teachers, the facilities, the curriculum, all the things that were there. And a lot of the people who got involved, who are involved in our teaching program, love that job. They think it's wonderful. They're excited about it. It's enjoyable to them. They're probably going to do it till the day they die. But there's a pretty good percentage of the people who do that job where it's a foot washing job. Isn't that shocking? It's a foot washing job for them. But they're doing it anyway. Every Sunday evening, every Wednesday evening, there are a minimum of six people. If you just put one adult in every classroom for those first grades up through fifth grade, and this we're talking about the lower grades now, just one adult. It takes six to cover that. And since it's little kids, you can't do it with six. You've got to have some extra people in there to help out. So probably it's some more like about 10 or 12 every Sunday evening, every Wednesday evening. There's 10 people. And I guarantee you that not all of them are in there because this is just the love of their life. It's a foot washing job. And they just keep doing it. And doing it. And doing it. And I just want you to know, when we meet on Sunday evenings and Wednesday night, that there are people who are washing our feet. They're doing the foot washing job. And they're doing a pretty good job of it too. And I think about children's Bible time. We started this back in 1996, 97, something like that. We wanted to do something special for families that had little kids. We kind of figured this out that if a young family comes in, they got little kids. They come in, they sit down, they try to get through our service, and they don't get anything out of it. All they end up doing is wrestling with their kids. So we said, well, let's make it so at least part of the service, the little kids got something of their own, a lesson on their own, level. And we'll give those parents a chance to listen to what's happening here and maybe learn a little bit and get something out of this. And maybe they'll come back the next Sunday. Maybe they'll come back the next Sunday and the next Sunday. And so that was kind of the idea of it. That's what we were hoping would happen. And we're still doing this thing right now. And there's a crew of about eight or nine people who are over in that part of the building right now who are washing our feet. Now, some of them really enjoy this. Some think it's great. Some think it's just wonderful. This is my job. This is my job for life. But I guarantee you that some of those people are washing feet. It's not the job that they would pick for themselves, but they're doing it anyway. So these are two programs where we had never have enough people to do the job right. There's always a need for more people to teach. There's always a need for more people to take children's Bible time for 1 month and lead it. Now, let me be clear about this. I'm not talking about more helpers. The word helper covers a lot of territory. When someone says, well, I'll help you out, that can mean anything from sitting in the room and doing crowd control, showing up, you know, at on time and being crowd control, to someone who actually takes maybe responsibility for part of what's going to happen with that child's class or in children's Bible time and actually planning it, preparing it, and doing something with it. I mean, that help covers a broad thing. And I just noticed this. Back in 2008, we did the survey of the congregation. This is the one before this last one, but I remember this because I actually went through and counted this up. And for children's Bible time, we had 16 people who were willing to lead, and we had 100 people or so who signed up to be helpers. And let me just tell you the statistics here so you understand what I'm talking about. In order for an adult to do children's Bible time and only do it 1 month out of the year, we would need 24 people who would say, I will lead 1 month of children's Bible time. I'll make sure it happens. The reason is we divided into two pieces. So there's an upper group and there's a lower group. And someone prepares for them and someone prepares for them. And then there's all these other people that kind of help out and watch over things. But in order to have it so that someone who does children's Bible time only does it 1 month out of the year, we would need 24 people who would say, yes, I'll lead. Well, I remember back in 2008, we had 16 people. And so that meant that some people had to double up and in some cases triple up. And we could say the same thing about our classes, about our teaching program. Just to cover the classes up through fifth grade, it takes a minimum of 6 on Sunday night and Wednesday night, a minimum of 12 to run it. But someone says, we have all these wonderful teachers here at Sunshine. Oh, well, they teach in the schools. They know all about this. They can put this stuff together, no problem. And thank God we do have those people. And they're doing a wonderful job. And they're working hard at it. And we shouldn't just wash their feet. We ought to kiss their feet because they're carrying the ball for us. But I want to tell you something. Some of these people are doing double and triple duty. And you know how those disciples felt when Jesus got up and walked over and got the basin and the water and the towel and did the job that no one else would do? You know, remember how they felt? That's how we ought to feel. That's how we ought to feel about letting our feet be washed like that all the time. If you don't get anything else out of this lesson, I want you to get that. Just letting other people wash our feet. Just doing the job that no one else wants to do. Just letting them do it. Oh, you missed that. Right there. And could you trim my toenails while you're at it? I'd like to have a pedicure. And when I say doing double and triple duty, some of our people teach at school through the week. This has happened. So I'm not making sense. They teach all through the week. They come here on Sunday morning, and it happens to be their month for children's Bible time, so they take care of that. They come back Sunday night because they have a Sunday night class that they teach. And then they show up on Wednesday night, and lo and behold, someone can't make it. And so they end up being the substitute teacher for that. And for that week, they don't even see us. They spend all their time with kids. And I promise you that the last thing a teacher who works with kids all day long wants to see is another room full of kids. This is not rocket science. We provide materials, curriculum, all kinds of support, ideas. You have wonderful role models, people who know what they're doing. You can be in the room with them. You can see what they do, how they do it. You can do it. But let me tell you this. If you can coach a soccer team, you can teach a class. If you can lead a 4-H group, you can teach a class. If you can run a little scout troop, you can teach a class. If you can organize a birthday party for your kid, you can teach a class. It's not that hard. And I'm not just talking to mothers, but I'm talking to fathers too. And by the way, you wives, where your husbands are up there at Deer Creek camping out, you make sure they hear this, okay? Because I want them to know what I'm saying here. It's a big deal to have your dad coaching your soccer team, isn't it? It's a big deal to have your dad in charge of your scout troop. It's a big deal to have your dad involved in anything that you're doing. I'm going to tell you, it's a big deal to have your dad at children's Bible time. It's a big deal to have your dad teaching a class that you're a part of, isn't it? It's a really big deal. And probably way more important. And so, folks, these are foot washing jobs. That's what they are. They're foot washing jobs. Jobs that only a few are willing to do, jobs that only a few are excited about. We got all these other people who are stepping in, they're doing it, they're doing it, they're doing it, they're doing it. And what we need is a bunch of people to take care of some foot washing jobs. Now, at the invitation this morning, I don't want a bunch of people running up here. I'm going to tell you where I want you to go. First of all, I want Kristen Riley to stand up. Kristen Riley, you stand up. If you are willing, I'm surprised she's in here. I thought she might be in the back, which is where she usually is. That's the woman you want to go see if you would be willing to lead children's Bible time. And by the way, I am going to promote all the helpers this morning. We're having promotion Sunday next week for the kids, right? Don't they move up? The kids move up next week. I'm promoting all the helpers. You are now officially leaders and teachers. Yay! You made it. You've arrived. You graduated. Let's go celebrate. She's the lady you need to see right there. And I wanted Nick Davis to be here, but I guess he's working. So I'm going to have Don stand up. Don's got his pad. He's ready too. But I guarantee you it would be wonderful. Yeah, Don, stand up so they know where to go. Don't come up here, go there, or go there, okay? That's where I want you to go after this thing is over, is to those people and say, you know, I'm tired of being just a helper. I'd like to be a leader. I'm tired of being just a helper. I'd like to be a teacher. Get me in there. I want to wash some people's feet. I understand that's what Jesus wants me to be, a foot washing leader. A disciple sat in that room with a basin of water and a towel in sight, and nobody made a move to take care of the job. They sat through the Passover supper. They sat through the Lord's supper. No one moved. And finally, the last person in that room that should have been doing it, got up and he took care of the job. He did the job that no one else wanted to do. Foot washing leadership. That was Jesus' example to his disciples. There comes a time when every disciple has to make the transition between the person who has their feet washed and to become the person who does the foot washing. You know what Jesus says? He says, I've given you an example that so you ought to wash one another's feet. It's not always just one way. Sometimes it goes the other way. Jesus was just trying to help his disciples make the transition. Jesus wanted his disciples to be leaders. He's taught his disciples how to lead by his example. By his example, he showed them that they should become servants of the people around them. By his example, he showed them that they should lead by taking the initiative. And by his example, he showed them that they should lead by taking the job that no one else would do. Foot washing leadership. If there's someone here this morning that wants to become a child of God, we're going to sing our hymn. We'll give you an opportunity to come before us, to confess your faith, to be baptized in the name of Christ. Become a child of God today. And if there's someone this morning who wants to come before the church and say, hey, this is my sin, this is my problem, this is whatever it is, to ask for our prayers, the invitation's for you also. Let's stand and sing our hymn.